If unemployment rates are the clearest indication of the state of the economy, then the recession seems to be going strong. Even though the number of jobless claims in August fell slightly from July, they were greater than anticipated by economists. These days, a job, any job, is considered a boon. But a new study reveals that those among us in the low-wage workforce are routinely denied overtime pay and are often paid less than the minimum wage. Considered the most comprehensive look at wage violations over the last 10 years, the study, released yesterday, surveyed more than 4,000 workers across a spectrum of low-wage industries, such as the discount retail market, childcare, and apparel manufacturing. It found that a whopping 68% of workers reported pay-related violations within the past week, amounting to about 15% in lost wages. Those most affected among the low-wage workers are women, African Americans, and undocumented immigrants. Labor Secretary Hilda Solis responded to the study's findings, saying there is no excuse for the disregard of federal labor standards, especially those designed to protect the neediest among us. Some have argued that the study's findings make the clearest case for expanding and strengthening unions. Joining me on the phone now is Nick Theodore, director of the Center for Urban Economic Development and an associate professor in the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's one of the co-authors of the study. Welcome to Uprising, Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. So did the study just look at low-wage workers or workers across the wage spectrum?
What we were focusing on were frontline workers, so not managers or supervisors, in industries that tend to have lower wages. So as you mentioned, apparel manufacturing, janitorial work, care work, and so on.
And the federal minimum wage is considered a pretty clear-cut definition of what's the lowest wage one can get paid. What did you find in terms of just wage violations on hourly wages?
What we found was 26% of workers in low-wage industries were paid less than legally required minimum wage in the previous work week. So there were clear-cut violations of one of the most basic labor standards that we have in this country.
And who among the workers were the most likely to be getting less than the federal minimum wage? I mean, is it mostly undocumented immigrants who, you know, have a harder time reporting such or feel more fear of reporting such violations?
Sure. Undocumented immigrants certainly bear the brunt of a lot of the type of violations that we uncovered in our report. But I think it would be a mistake if listeners walked away with the picture that this was just a phenomenon that was affecting this segment of the workforce. For instance, women were 50% more likely than men to experience minimum wage violations. African-American workers were three times more likely than their white counterparts to experience a minimum wage violation.
Men and women.
And so this is a phenomenon that is affecting the foreign-born who are working in the United States, but also very concentrated among women of all races and African-Americans and Latino workers as well, U.S.-born Latino workers.
What about overtime pay?
We see very similar patterns with overtime pay. And I think what's important here is that we're not talking, both when we're speaking about minimum wage and overtime, we're not talking about a couple pennies here and there. The minimum wage violations averaged about a dollar an hour below the minimum wage, and overtime violations, which were the most widespread violations in our sample, in our study, we found that the average was workers working 11 hours of overtime, hours that were either unpaid or not paid at all. I mean, underpaid or not paid at all.
Instead of being paid time and a half that one is expecting?
Right. In many cases, there was no payment at all, or the time and a half that is legally mandated under U.S. employment and labor law, the time and a half wasn't paid either.
So what about the geographic sort of variations? I'm assuming you looked at workers across the country. Were there certain parts of the country where violations were more likely to occur than others?
The survey was undertaken in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. And over the coming months, we're going to explore some of the regional differences, comparisons between New York, L.A., and Chicago. But right now, what we've done is we've pooled the sample of the three largest cities in the United States and analyzed that data.
So do you think this is mostly an urban problem? Are there other studies that are more geographically comprehensive that one might be able to compare this to?
Unfortunately, there's very little to compare to. We have some industry-specific studies that have been done in different parts of the country. I was involved in one that looked at day labor markets across the United States. There have been studies of the restaurant industry and other industries, but we don't have the type of systematic data for other cities or other parts of the country at all. Mm-hmm. So there's very little to go on. What we have heard in rural areas, though, and this probably is no surprise, that there are a lot of violations in those labor markets as well. But to this point, we don't have anything nearly as systematic as what we've done here.
My guest is Nick Theodore. He's the director of the Center for Urban Economic Development and an associate professor at the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at University of Illinois at Chicago. And we're talking about a study that he has co-authored that looks at wage violations in the low-wage industries. And the results are pretty shocking. What about tipped workers? Those tipped workers, I understand, first of all, have slightly different rules that around their wages to begin with, right?
That's right. The minimum wage for tipped workers is substantially lower than that for the base minimum wage that we have in this country. And unfortunately for those workers, they must rely on tips as a way to earn their living. But what we found was widespread tip stealing among the tipped workforce, business owners or managers or supervisors were tapping in and dipping into the tips that were received by wait staff and others who received tips. Hmm. So tip stealing is just another form of wage theft that was exposed in this study.
How long are workers working without getting either a rest period or a meal break?
This varied across industries, but what we did find was that many workers were either working off the clock. So those workers who maybe had come in early or stayed late, 70% did not receive any pay at all for the work they performed outside their regular shift. And those within the regular shift, we found evidence of meal breaks being interrupted or not given at all, rest breaks where they're required as they are in California not being given. So what we're seeing here, what we're painting a picture of, is a situation where workers are being underpaid for the work that they're doing and having their hours extended throughout the workday, often unpaid.
There's a thing called illegal deductions from workers' pay that your study also looked at. Can you explain what that is and how common it is?
Right. In certain industries, we found that employers were deducting illegally from workers' paychecks, and this was often leading to wages falling below the minimum wage.
Deducting what, though?
Well, sometimes it would be deductions for uniforms that were not allowed to be made, deductions for equipment that was required on the job, and so on.
That's not legal to deduct that from the...
Some of them are and some of them are not, but the lawyers that we were working with here helped us design survey questions to focus just on those deductions that are not legal, and so we were able to report that here.
Now, some have said that this study is the clearest indication that there is a huge, huge problem in the way in which our labor, not just labor laws, because the laws are in place, but the way in which labor is treated in the United States as part of this structure, as part of the workplace model that we have. What to you does the study say in those terms? How is it that such large numbers of workers are mistreated so widely?
Well, I think there are a couple of issues here. First, under the Bush administration, our enforcement capacity was badly, badly eroded. And so we simply do not have, at the federal level, the number of investigators that are required to monitor American workplaces. And I think that's why you see the Secretary of Labor committing to stepping up the enforcement.
Well, I understand that she simply said that we need another survey, a more comprehensive survey. It seems like your survey is already a good enough indication that something is deeply wrong.
My reading of her statement was that she was committing to the hiring of additional enforcement officials at the U.S. Department of Labor. The U.S. Department of Labor needs to make good on that commitment, on that pledge from the Secretary of Labor.
And
so I think enforcing these laws is one step, but we have to update our legal standards anyway. With the rise of labor subcontracting and temp work and so many other changes to the way in which the employment relationship has been set up, our laws simply have not kept up with those changes. And a lot of the abuses that we find occur on the edge of the labor market, where employers have reworked what it means to be an employee for these companies. And on that frontier, we see a lot of bad practice.
And certainly, just anecdotally, and I'm sure there's other studies done over the years, it seems as though the sort of average expectation of what a job would be, even in a low-wage industry, has really changed over the years into the part-time workforce, the temporary workforce, the subcontracted workforce, and any way that employers can find to deny workers things like healthcare benefits and union rights, et cetera. I mean, it's just seems like a much weaker workforce these days.
Yeah, I think that the jobs simply aren't delivering what they used to in terms of pay and benefits. And a lot of workers, especially those that are struggling a bit to make ends meet, are really suffering, they and their families, in these kinds of jobs. And I think that's what makes it so appalling that you see the levels of wage theft and substandard conditions, because these are really affecting workers in this country and their families very, very severely.
Nick, what did you find in your study about retaliation from employers when workers did try to, say, stand up for, or, you know, I'm sure most workers know that they're being completely cheated, even if they may not know the letter of the federal law, if they've tried to organize or complain, what has happened?
Right. What we found is one in five workers in our sample reported that they had made a complaint to their employer or attempted to form a union in the last year. And of those workers, 43% experienced a form of illegal retaliation by their employer or supervisor. These types of retaliation included being fired or suspended, threats to call immigration authorities, threats to cut the workers' hours or pay. And so when workers have gotten together or pursued these cases individually, employers often have pushed back, and they've pushed back hard.
And they've pushed back illegally in terms of firing?
That's correct.
So do you think that this study makes a strong case for also strengthening unions? Just given what's the discussion politically in Congress, there has been a lot of controversy around the Employee Free Choice Act, particularly the card check provision that labor unions have fought for, that corporations have pushed back, corporations like Walmart and Whole Foods have pushed back on, and even now some members of Congress are pulling back their support. Do you think, in addition to strengthening federal labor law and increasing the number of enforcement officers, that it should be easier to form a union?
Absolutely, and I think that's, if for those that look closely at the labor law, you see it's not a privilege or to form a union, but a right. But that right has been badly weakened over the past few decades. Mm-hmm. What we find is that in those workplaces where employers pursue a higher road strategy, they allow unions, they provide fringe benefits and so on, there we don't see the level of violations that we see across the low-wage labor market. And I think part of the reason for this is that workers have a voice in the workplace, and that these employers and workers pursue a higher road strategy toward competitiveness that is based on investment and innovation and moving forward in the firm rather than sweating labor as a way to achieve some measure of profitability.
I want to go back briefly to the findings around gender and race discrimination. It's as you mentioned, your study found that women are more likely to be discriminated. African Americans, men and women, are more likely to have wage theft, and undocumented immigrants as well. What do you think that attributes to? Is it just that these low-wage jobs are dominated by people of color and women, or that people are literally discriminated on the job?
Well, it's not that the industries are dominated, because we've controlled for that in our measures. What we're seeing, I think, is a reflection of the real-world implications of inadequate employment opportunities for many segments of the U.S. workforce. And so whether we're talking about women or African-Americans or foreign-born workers in this country, many of them are holding substandard jobs, and there are many, many substandard jobs in this country. So I think it's partly a reflection of their limited employment opportunities, and many times they're choosing between one or more very poor-quality jobs.
And also, do you feel that workers are perceived as more vulnerable if they're women or undocumented, for example, and perhaps less likely to retaliate, less likely to fight back?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's happening. And, I think that's why we see among, for instance, women who are unauthorized immigrants, 47% had a minimum wage violation. So you look at the interaction between gender and some of the other demographic characteristics, and you can see that, especially for that group of workers, women, unauthorized immigrants, they're really bearing the brunt of widespread minimum wage violations.
And was there a trend among one particular workforce versus another? I mean, if you're saying women who are undocumented immigrants, did you see, for example, childcare or other services where women, foreign-born women, dominate? Did you see the worst violations there?
You do. You see, we see the worst violations in terms of minimum wage violations in apparel and textile manufacturing, mm-hmm. where there are a lot of women, personal and repair services, and private household work, all of which have many women in them.
Well, Nick Theodore, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Where can listeners check out a copy of the study, Broken Laws, Unprotected Workers?
We actually have a website with unprotectedworkers.org, and they can see a copy of the report there, or at our website at the University of Illinois at Chicago, Center for Urban Economic Development, or urbaneconomy.org.
That's urbaneconomy.org and unprotectedworkers.org. Nick Theodore, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Nick Theodore is the director of the Center for Urban Economic Development, again online at urbaneconomy.org, and an associate professor in the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at the University of Illinois and Chicago. We've been talking about a new study just released yesterday called Broken Laws, Unprotected Workers. It's the most comprehensive study of the low-wage workforce to date, in the last 10 years, rather. And you can find that entire study online at unprotectedworkers.org. It looked at workers from Chicago, New York, and right here in Los Angeles.